So, Paul, would you like to say something for introductions?
Thank you, Bill. So thank you, Faye, for accept the invitation for today's talk. And I'm so excited about this. And I know that many of us work with children and women. Most of us, we probably connect to the topic directly and indirectly. So I hope that today's discussion will be benefit for us, because sometimes because of the lockdown, because of the COVID, we tend to forget about human trafficking. Just focus on food securities and education, just like the surfacing. So I know it's an emergency thing, but thanks to Free to accept the invitation and talk about these important topics. The floor is yours. Okay.
Thank you. And thank you for inviting me to talk about sex trafficking and exploitation. I will just share my screen if I can do that very cleverly.
Yes.
Can you see that yet?
Not yet.
Can you see my screen? All right, let me try again. All right, share screen. This one. There we go. Now you can see?
Now we can see.
Okay. All right. So just by way of introduction, I'm the program manager at Free to Shine. I've been there for nearly 3 years. And as you might know, I'm stuck in Australia at the moment, but I'm still working full time with Free to Shine. Free to Shine is, I should also say, I will try and talk slowly, but please interrupt if anybody needs translation. And hopefully Sapal, I can't translate, Sapal could translate for us. So Free to Shine is a child protection NGO, and the aim is to prevent sex trafficking and exploitation through empowering girls and their families. I believe in order to prevent something, we need to understand what the problem is. And that's why I've educated the staff recently with the Trafficking in Persons report. And I think it's something that we all need to be aware of, the problems of trafficking in Cambodia. Before any presentation, I always let people know that some of the information might be upsetting or distressing. So it's okay to walk away or take time out if it gets too much. I won't be offended, I also won't know, but also just be aware some of the information, if you're not used to thinking about these topics or hearing about them, it can be quite upsetting for you. So the Trafficking in Persons Report 2021, it's a report that's released by the US government of state, and it assesses government efforts around the world to prevent and deal with human trafficking, to prevent human trafficking and highlight recommended strategies to address this crime and try and protect the victims. The information in the report is only what each country's government reports. So there's two levels to that. So it's only what the government reports to the US government. Okay, so that could be a little bit subjective, but more importantly, it's only what the authorities in that country know about. So many crimes are not reported and remain unknown. So it's more likely there's a lot more trafficking and crime that happens than what actually gets reported. So this is most likely the minimum that we would have. I'll just give you an overview first, and then we'll talk about Cambodia specifically. Oh, what's going on? Something's happened. All right. So this year in 2021, the risk of trafficking has increased due to COVID. So individuals are more at risk of trafficking and exploitation because there's been a lot of jobs have been lost. There's limited options for employment. And as we know, a lot of people have loans and are in financial debt. For the traffickers, COVID-19 pandemic has also meant less problems. So just like the Paul just said then, is we're all focused on COVID. So government, police and authorities, all their resources are being used to deal with the pandemic. which means there's less police and law resources to deal with trafficking, and it's been given a lower priority around the world. So this means traffickers can be more open about what they're doing and also a lot more confident that they won't get caught. Efforts to stop the spread of COVID-19 have forced many people to use the internet and online resources, including traffickers. So the online recruitment and grooming, so that if people understand what grooming is getting people on side, getting people to trust you, and then you can exploit them. So online recruitment and grooming has increased as children have spent more time online for virtual learning due to school closures, and often they don't have adult supervision. So the Trafficking in Persons report ranks every country in the world that participates. So tier one countries, green, they're the ones the governments are fully complying with what is called the Trafficking Victims Protection Act. So the standards that are set around stopping or preventing human trafficking. Level two, tier two countries, it's governments, they're not fully complying yet with the act, but they're making significant efforts. Tier level two watch list is countries whose governments do not fully comply, but are making significant efforts. So they're trying really hard, but they still have the number of victims of severe forms of trafficking is high or increasing. There's a failure to provide evidence that they are trying to address or stop trafficking, and the country shows commitment to take additional future steps. So the tier two watch list, they're kind of like the tier three, the countries whose governments do not comply with minimum standards and they're making no efforts. So the tier two watch list are countries that usually would be around about the tier three. So they've still got lots of trafficking. They haven't given a lot of evidence to the US government for the report, but they are showing a commitment to take future steps. All right. So, hey, Lung, I can hear your kids. In 2021, Cambodia is on the tier two watch list. So it's the orange one, the same as what it was in 2020. The Trafficking in Persons report this year did consider downgrading Cambodia to a tier three, except there's one government document, which is a plan for addressing trafficking, but no action has yet been taken. So it's very fortunate that Cambodia was not downgraded to red. The major concerns that they list in the TIPS 2021 about Cambodia is government corruption. They say that authorities do not investigate reports of trafficking or exploitation, especially if the business owners in the entertainment venues and brick factories. So again, that's possibly around a bit of corruption or the links and the contacts. If the business owners are in those areas where trafficking generally happens, the authorities don't investigate. Also, in Cambodia, the justice system, which is the police, the authority, the law, the courts, do not have enough processes, okay, which means traffickers can run away before they get caught. So traffickers might get charged, but there's not a system that can monitor them or put them in jail on remand before they get to court, and often they disappear. According to reports in the Anti-Trafficking Youth Police, so this is what is actually the body and the information in the report. Cambodian authorities arrested 48 suspects connected with 37 cases of non-sexual human trafficking, so that's usually labour trafficking, and 46 suspects in connection with 21 cases of sex trafficking of children and young people. So you'll see that there's usually more than one person involved in a case of trafficking. According to the Ministry of Justice, the government prosecuted, okay, so they took to court 348 cases of trafficking in the 1 year from July to June 2021. The government convicted and found guilty 44 individuals of trafficking, of who 234 are still in jail. So this is just in Cambodia in 1 year. All of Cambodia's 25 provinces are sources for human trafficking. The interesting thing about Cambodia, it is a source, a destination, and a transit country. So that means the source of trafficking is where the victims come from. The destination can be where victims are brought into. And then transit is where victims of trafficking might be taken through, for example, from Vietnam to Thailand. So Cambodia is quite unique in that it's a source, a destination, and a transit country. So what types of trafficking come in and out of Cambodia in 2021? So Mousavi reported in the tip to have referred 220 Cambodian national victims of trafficking to NGOs in Cambodia. Some of these victims were repatriated, so were brought back to Cambodia from countries including China, Indonesia, Malaysia, Singapore, Thailand, and Vietnam. And a lot of them were actually trafficked within Cambodia. Of those 220, 113 were victims of forced marriage, 54 of forced labour, and 3 of sex trafficking. The other 50 were not specified what happened to them. So the types of trafficking that have happened in 2021 and that happen globally, but this is specifically about Cambodia. So sex trafficking and child exploitation. Is everybody following? Do we need to stop the translation?
Yep, okay, very interesting.
Yes. Okay, yes. I'll keep talking. Thanks, Sarah.
Yes,
go. So sex trafficking is largely not seen. So it's a lot of it's undercover. It's happening in back streets, hotel rooms, people moving around. It's not what we see on the street, most of sex trafficking. It's mainly Cambodian and ethnic Vietnamese women and girls move from rural areas to the cities where criminals exploit them in trafficking, in brothels, beer gardens, massage parlours, salons, karaoke bars, retail spaces and non-commercial sites. So girls are moving from the country into the city looking for work, getting work in these places, the ages of 14, 15, 16, and then being exploited or trafficked, so forced to have sex for money and then often not getting money. They're kept and like prisoners. The government in Cambodia tends to focus on foreigners' involvement in sex with children rather than targeting education and putting their police resources into the local population. Khmer nationals are the main source of demand for commercial sex with children in Cambodia. So if anybody's done training with First Step, they make a really strong point about that too. So we have, it's a bit of a myth that it's these Western men coming and they're doing all of the child sexual abuse in Cambodia. That is definitely happens and a very, very awful part that happens. But the majority is actually happening by local people. Another area of trafficking in Cambodia in 2021 and increasing has been about marriage in China. So traffickers are recruiting women and girls, again, usually from the country areas, with false reasons to travel to China to marry Chinese men. So if we know, China used to have the one-child policy, and so a lot of their daughters were killed or had abortions, and so there's a lot of men in China and not enough women to marry. So the women often incur thousands of dollars in debt to brokers who facilitate the transaction. So there's brokers in Cambodia who are linked to China and they are getting the girls and women and they get them to pay for it and then they send them off to China. The men in China sometimes force these women to work in factories or exploit them into sex trafficking to repay the debt. So they've paid, they've got them over to China, they've paid for it, and now the women have to work to pay off that debt. they think they're going to marry a Chinese man. Some parents in Cambodia have reported that they receive between $1,500 and $3,000 from brokers to send their daughters to China for marriage. So you can understand how desperate some families might be, and they get the promise that there's a man in China wants to marry their daughter. They get given $3,000. The daughter is then sent away and she ends up forced labour, sex trafficking, somewhere lost in China. The next type of trafficking is the fishing industry. So traffickers continue to recruit Cambodian men and boys in Thailand to work on fishing boats and exploit them in forced labour in international waters. Cambodian victims who've escaped from their traffickers have been found in countries really far away, such as Fiji, Indonesia, Malaysia, Mauritius, Papua New Guinea, Senegal, and South Africa. So these guys have been taken onto boats and then forced to work, not paid, not allowed to leave. Some have been lucky enough to escape, but it shows how far away from home that they've been. And if anybody saw the film Buoyancy, a Khmer film, well, done by an Australian guy, but it's in Khmer, and it really highlights the trafficking of a young guy into the Thai fishing industry. And the next one is brick factories. So there are more than 10,000 Cambodians living in brick factories, including nearly 4,000 children. So sometimes factory owners will pay off an employee's loan. So if an employee had a loan before they started working, the owner might pay it off, and then that person is in debt to the owner. So the owner of the brick factory can then force them to work in very bad conditions. The employee can't leave because they're working to pay the debt that their owner paid for them before. Sometimes owners make employees take out new loans as a condition of employment or to cover medical expenses resulting from injuries that have happened while they've been working in the brick factory. It just shows how powerless a lot of the employees are. There's an extensive and largely not regulated, so it's a very big network where nobody's kind of watching what's happening with some microfinance organisations and private credit organisations that contribute to this arrangement. So they can advertise loans to families saying, we can loan you this much money and then we'll connect you to this job in a brick factory where you can pay off your loan. And then they end up into a situation like number two. Traffickers often exploit children as young as 13 into domestic jobs and sex brothels to pay off family debt. So any debt the family might have got through the points above, sometimes then the children are trafficked or exploited to pay off that debt. So this is information that has been reported by the Cambodian government to the Trafficking in Persons Report. So it's not something that somebody else has just made up or thought about, whatever. It's actually come from reports from the government. So lastly, just this is more for interest. So Sipal will take the presentation. You can have a look at this. So this is in 2021. All the countries in the world that contribute into the TIP who are assessed as tier one, tier two watch list, and tier three. Just down the bottom, a note, some of those countries in tier three, the government is actually the trafficker. So I've listed a few of those governments there, but they actually have policies in the government for human trafficking. For example, trafficking into government-funded programs. So that's getting people from outside, trafficking them into programs funded by the government, forced labour in some medical services, sexual slavery in government camps and child soldiers. And then lastly, that's where you can download the report. The actual section on Cambodia, it's long. There's a lot of information. That's just a very quick snapshot, a presentation I did for the staff at Free to Shine that I thought might be of interest to share here as well. And that's it. Anyone got questions or comments or want to take a minute to digest?
Well, I'll take just a moment, Fee, to say that was a very well prepared and very concise and a chilling report. Several years ago, I facilitated a couple of very large meetings in Nong Khai, Thailand, right across from Vientiane, and had a number of government officials and other people in this meeting on this subject of trafficking. And one of the things that came out of that conversation that I didn't know was that many of the people who were trafficked and then repatriated back to their home country got trafficked again. Because the reasons they were trafficked in the first place didn't change.
Exactly, Bill.
If you've had that.
Sorry. Yeah, that's actually the premise on why Free to Shine was set up. So Nikki, the founder, she did some volunteer work at 11 years ago now in Cambodia with survivors of sex trafficking. And in her story that she says is that very evident that people who are trafficked end up being trafficked again because no circumstances had changed. So Nikki said that she asked the women who were the survivors, what can we do to help? And they said, keep girls in school, because none of them were in school when they were trafficked. So that's the premise on which Free to Shine was set up. And what we do is trying to keep girls engaged at school. So we're not an education program, even though that's what we do. But whilst girls are at school, they're being supervised by adults, they're engaged with their community, they're occupied, and then also having a higher level of education is a protective factor against trafficking. So absolutely, 100%. You've got to change the circumstances. It's the same really for even someone, say, with drug and alcohol issues. They can go to a rehabilitation centre, and then they go back to their community and nothing has changed and they fall back into the same patterns of behaviour.
Well, that that links in and reinforces our mission as a foundation, which is to eliminate poverty. And we think the key to that is education. We know the key to that is education of girls and women. And and trafficking is just one more outcome of poverty in the first place. I think poverty being a root cause.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, thank you. Thank you for a powerful presentation.
Anybody got any questions or comments?
So, Fiona, the Tran Thai. Thank you so much for the great presentation. That's interesting. So my question is, because this issue it seems like hard to solve, but what can we do as an organization to help reduce the sex trafficking or something? Can you please share some of your advice?
Sure, Ty. It's exactly what everyone's doing and what Bill has just said. The main causes of trafficking is often the same as drug and alcohol, poverty, you know, mental health, mental illness, is keeping people, one, is, I will say Free to Shine only works with girls because it's up in the 90% of people who are sex trafficked are girls and women. But sexual exploitation of children happens across both genders, so boys as well. So it is about creating connections and engagement in the community, meaningful connections for children in the community. Also having adults who are aware and educated about the dangers. You're not leaving your 7, 8, 9, 10-year-olds at home alone all day. Yeah. So having adult supervision. Also trying to eliminate or address poverty, because at the end of the day, we do a thing called a myth. And one of the examples that's given is there's a family in a village, say a white, you know, white couple from the West come in, they say to the mother, it's a single mother of four girls, says, oh, I can give your daughter, I can take her to my NGO, we'll feed her, we'll give her somewhere to stay, we'll give her an education. And of course, the mother thinks, fantastic, it's one less mouth for her to feed, her daughter's going to get a good education, and says, yes, that's fantastic. Bang, there it's gone. And that's a thing that we do with groups. And I did it with a group of school-aged children from Australia who said, oh, you'd never give up your daughter. And then when I explained it, they went, oh, yeah, you would. You know, and they had been to a school in Cambodia the day before where all of these people ran up and gave them hugs and looked after them and everything. And one of the wonderful things I think about Khmer culture and people is everyone can be very trusting. But we need to become a little bit more discerning is my word. So question, if something seems too good to be true, it usually is. And really educating adults around that, educating adults and children about online safety. There's so much training available in Cambodia. We've just done some really good stuff through A21 as well around trafficking and online stuff. So really it is about education, but then also addressing all those factors, which we're all trying to do anyway.
Well, you just raised a really interesting point there, Fiona, is it's the appeal of let me take your kid to my orphanage and I'll see that they're taken good care of. I remember several years ago in a meeting with UNICEF offices in Cambodia, where they said a couple of things that stick in my mind. 72% of all the kids in so-called orphanages in Cambodia have at least one living parent.
Sure.
And secondly, that in UNICEF's opinion, orphanages are the very last resort. That's the last choice for taking care of a kid. And in some cases, they may serve, but in way too many cases, they are simply some opportunistic person or couple attracting kids, creating a job for themselves, and then they become a tourist attraction to raise money. And Friends International has done some very aggressive work to combat that and even created a video called Don't Create More Orphans. Have you seen that video? It's very dark.
Yeah, we're part of a 3PC network, which is headed up by Friends International. And there is a big push in Cambodia to be closing orphanages, which is very long overdue. So orphanages are getting closed, and there was, unfortunately, it's still a lot done by NGOs, but there's been a lot of money put into closing orphanages and then finding relatives of children who have been living in those orphanages. Part of the problems have been that some of them, many years ago, a lot of the orphanages did start up because of AIDS. So there were a lot of children who were left as orphans because their parents died of AIDS. Mm-hmm. And so that's why a lot of the orphanages in Cambodia were set up. But then, of course, exactly as you said, it's become a business for people. And there's one I won't mention, but you can go onto their website and you can book a tour for $50. And you get taken around and you meet children. And I know of a circumstance, there was a kid, he wasn't even in the orphanage, but he was kind of hooked up with a bit of a mentor, an older Westerner, and that guy ended up sexually abusing him. And that's just within the last year.
Well, so, I stumbled across one of these places in Siem Reap one time. This is 5-6 years ago. And I just saw the sign on the road that said AOEO Orphanage. It was along the river, headed to where you would take the boat to go out onto the lake. And so I stopped and started meeting some people and investigating. And it, you know, that's what I'm interested in, is taking care of kids. And it just didn't smell right. And I checked them with UNICEF. And the guy scratches his head and he remembered something. And this guy was abusing the girls in that orphanage. It's no longer there.
So they are slowly closing them for multiple reasons. Also, children development is obviously, well, it's not obvious to some people, children's development is better within a family situation, or at least a kinship care. It's not, doesn't have to be parents, or at least a small family kind of unit. Mm-hmm. So what is kind of lacking a lot in Cambodia, though, because it's called deinstitutionalization. So getting rid of the institutions, that happened in Australia back in the late 80s and 90s when I started being a social worker. But what it meant is you needed to have funded placements for a lot of these children to go to. So in Cambodia, whilst they are trying to close the orphanages, there's not a lot of money being put into setting up alternative placements or money to support, hopefully mainly kinship carers, to take on these children. Mm-hmm. So there's still lots of gaps because it's such a poor country as well. And the government's got a lot of buy-in, but unfortunately hasn't got a lot of resources being put into it. So whilst closing the orphanages is definitely, and it is happening, and it's a great thing that it's happening, there still needs to be more resources put into alternative placements for so many children, in my humble opinion.
And it's not limited.
Going to take up the whole meeting, you know, if you get me talking too much.
Well, no, it's an important subject and deserves some conversation. And it's not limited to just to Cambodia.
God, no.
The issue in Thailand, particularly up in the northern part of Thailand and the hill tribe villages, the trafficking up there is frightful. ECPAT, there's an organization, not just to stop trafficking, but to stop child sex trafficking, which is a big deal in Thailand. It becomes a tourist attraction. And in Myanmar, I was told that more Myanmar traffic victims are men more than women in Myanmar into the Thai fishing industry, which is this horrible situation.
Yeah, that's right. I think it is. I went to a conference in Bangkok now a couple of years ago, the anti-trafficking conference.
And AAT, was that the? I've worked with them, and they were at that conference I was talking about in Nong Khai, good organization.
And there was about 35 people from Cambodia of the, I think it was about 300 delegates. But that was reported the Thai government are really making steps to address trafficking and working together with authorities and NGOs. It was really encouraging to hear. Now, who knows what's happened since COVID? Exactly as what I said in that presentation, is so many resources in every country are being poured into COVID enforcement of restrictions, etc. Like the Free to Shine team said the other day, 20 police walked down the street. It's that tiny little dirt road that the office is on, and a group of 20 police walked past. And it's obviously a bit of the threat, you know, to keep people in a red zone. But when you've got so many resources going into this COVID situation, what's happening, say, for trafficking and other crime and all of that stuff? The courts in Cambodia closed in March 2020, and they were closed for months. So no prosecution was happening, no supervision of people who'd been charged, and people just run away. Nice. It's also just one other thing, just with the trafficking, is that another bit of a myth that often is thought that the traffickers are always one step ahead of the police, or, you know, they're one step ahead of law enforcement. And a lot of research has been done around the world is they said the traffic routes are like highways. They're like bitumen roads. They are set really clearly around the world, but the levels of corruption, it's often the people right at the top echelons that are actually involved in trafficking, because at the end of the day, it's about money.
Yeah.
It's all about money and power. So whilst it's sex trafficking, the people who are accessing those women, girls, boys for sex, they're not the ones actually doing it. It's the people up the chain, and it's all money, money, money.
Are you
familiar it's corruption.
Are you familiar with Matt Friedman?
No, I don't think so.
He's spent about 50 years of his career in combating human trafficking, and he's now running an organization in. Excuse me, I need to get somebody admitted here. He's running an organization in Singapore that's an anti-trafficking organization. And I can't for the life of me remember the name of it right now. But if you just Googled Matt Friedman, he's quite a strong advocate to deal with this issue. He says there are more people living in slavery today than any time in human history before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, even, you know, you look at those Australia only brought in the Modern Slavery Act maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and Tara Winkler from CCT presented in Parliament here, because even in countries, Australia, America, the UK, there is so much trafficking that people think it only happens in developing countries. It's a global industry, and people are a commodity.
Yeah.
That's all it is, and it's really sad. So I mean, I feel very fortunate. I've worked at the pointy end of things before, and I feel very fortunate to be working in a program about prevention, because you really hope that you can be making a difference, like to the next generation, those kids coming through.
Well, your work with Free to Shine may be the most involved in human trafficking of any of the organizations in the CLLC, in this group of our friends. But it's not the only one. It's got to have tentacles. It's got to have touch points with virtually any of these other organizations. Yeah, go ahead, please.
No, I was going to say exactly what Ty just asked, though. What can we do? We're all kind of doing the same thing. We're trying to address the same issues. We're trying to give people a better life and allowing children to reach their potential and to live without fear and to live a safe life. So whatever it is that you're addressing, I think we've all got that common goal. That's why everyone's kind of interlinked.
Well, and so I think that most of us are focusing on education in one form or another. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, addresses the root cause. But still, you need to have an awareness that without the awareness that you bring, it can go unnoticed.
Yeah.
So, Paul, you're trying to get a word.
No, I just want to add a bit that, I mean, most of us here already aware, and with the information Fiona just provided, it's very informative. But as we know that this actually reported by the government. So as Bill mentioned earlier, that why in some other country men more than women, and why women more in Cambodia. So actually, we don't really know the exact number.
Yeah.
what the company in Cambodia reported. It's just what they know, the case that they found, but we don't know how many more men actually trafficked. To my study, I would say there would be more men trafficked in Cambodia than women. It's just my own judgment. Because as we know that in Cambodia, traditionally men usually work outdoor, right? Women tend to be stay home, taking care of the children. So basically men actually more vulnerable to human trafficking or like exploitation. Sometimes it's not even like trafficking, it's an agreement, but labor exploitations and so on like that. Just to address, I mean, we work with a lot of children and the more we spit out the information, the better for the community, because some community, they don't really know what sort of trick that the trafficker is doing, especially at the moment. I really appreciate that we address about the marriage and such, and this is not a recent information about like marriage scheme and so on like that. And it's not just in the marriage in China, but there's also a lot of cases in Korea and Japan and even like within the Southeast Asian nations as well. So this is something just we need to share the information as much as possible. And even the people in the village, they don't believe in us, but as long as we help to share that this thing exists and there are many people already trapped in this, and then it will help in the near future.
Yeah. Can I say, I agree totally about the forced labor, a lot of men, you know, in those jobs. And also what you alluded to, Bill, about Myanmar with the boys is the sexual abuse and commercial sexual abuse of boys. And in any country, anywhere, it's usually underreported because, one, people don't believe that boys can be abused as early as easily as girls, and that can become a bit cultural, but also there's so much shame. So I won't go into too much about it, but so many boys won't report it because of the shame around that, because it's usually by a man. So I think, like I said, the statistics in what I've just presented, one, it's what the Cambodian government has reported to the US government of state. But number two, it's only what has been reported. So it's probably like the tip of the iceberg, because most crime, we don't know, it's not reported. We don't know. Someone hasn't been caught. Someone hasn't said this happened to me. So it really is the tip of the iceberg.
So I really like Ty's question about what can we do. And let me turn it back to you, Fiona, and say, what's the most important takeaway for the group from your message today? What do you want them to not forget?
For me, it really is, look, so many of the families we work with, the parents aren't educated, the grandparents, you know, they didn't go to school, they don't understand. They're opportunistic. They have a lot of financial problems. And it really is about educating communities to be aware of the dangers for children, be that online or someone offering something that seems to be too good to be true. So, you know, nobody wants this to happen to their child, but people just aren't aware. So for me, there's really everyone taking responsibility to work with families. They're very uncomfortable conversations to have at times, but we really need to raise awareness. Even if you're doing it at the local authority level, is really educating people about the dangers. And I mean, we try and be strength-based, but we also need to be realists, that there's some really awful people in the world.
And
that's not a good note. That's not a good thing to end on.
It's strength-based.
And talk about what can the family do, you know, talk about safety for children, how to protect your kids a bit better, educate the parents around Facebook and can they understand how this works. You know, we were talking about, I think I mentioned last time, kids in a one-on-one virtual room with a teacher, make sure there's two of you together or they're in open spaces. And just really raising awareness about the dangers.
I think you said this before, is it's just be aware of a situation that looks too good to be true. Mm-hmm. And not in Cambodia, but in Thailand, in a couple of instances, one of the key links in the trafficking chain was the village chief, who was getting a kickback for making the introductions. Well, and if the village chief introduces you to somebody who tells you a story about how we'll take care of your daughter and she'll be working in a restaurant and she'll be able to send money home to you, and he says that the village chief endorses that, oh my gosh.
That's the level of corruption that goes right up through a chain that's not regulated, because unfortunately money still talks. So if you've got a policeman involved in it, the policeman, he'll be getting a kickback, he'll be getting money to recruit people. And often it's the in-between. So it might be a lady in the village that everybody knows, or like you said, Bill, the village leader, or someone who's trusted it that recruits people. So it could be even for labour, you know, like Paul said, is someone who gets all these people to go onto job sites and then they're trafficked out. You know, years ago I was in Dubai. And there was a huge problem there with Bangladeshi men who were brought over from Bangladesh to Dubai. And like the same saying in the brick kilns, their passports were taken off them, and then they were forced to work and they couldn't leave. They had no passport.
Yeah, that's one of the...
They can't contact families. They can't do anything. So that's happening around the world. It's happening, as I said, in, through and out of Cambodia as well.
Well... Awesome message.
Be aware. Be aware. And educate people and have the difficult conversations.
Yeah. Because...
And also, like, everyone's got my details. Anyone's welcome to contact me or email or anything if they want to as well. I'll put that out there.
Because any of us that are working out in the villages and dealing with these local remote communities could stumble across just a situation, just talking to a family about, oh, I don't know what to do. My daughter's got this job opportunity and she can go to Bangkok or she can go to someplace. And
well, my daughter's working as a domestic in Phnom Penh and I haven't been able to contact her for a month. Or 6 weeks or 2 months. Yeah, it might be, she might have changed her phone number, but you don't know. And that's what we're at the moment in lockdown, the red zone. That's what we're doing. The team are just calling girls. People change their phone numbers, et cetera, but people just, they go missing. People go missing.
Yeah. I've heard too many stories in my travels.
Mm.
Yeah, awesome. Yep. Awesome presentation.
Thank you, everyone, for listening.
It's important enough. Let's take another couple of minutes to make sure that somebody who's just listening quietly doesn't want to add something to the conversation.
Bill, I just have a few words. Just would like to contribute.
Please do.
I hope you can hear me well. At the moment, my internet was just turned off. So
we hear you fine.
I really feel sad that I missed most of your presentation, Tina, but I hope that, you know, there is, when we'll also share the record, I will just watch it again. I also think that Thai's question is really important for all of us who work for organizations. Or no matter if it is for just our own family, that's really important to us. What can we contribute to this, to reduce this trafficking, or, you know, for the child right, for the child safety? So if I am not wrong, we as an organization also need to have what they call child protection policy. Each organization is supposed to have that, no matter if you work with children or not children. So think about that. If your organization doesn't have that yet, that is one thing that you should have. And all the staff should be trained on what is it about child protection. That is one of the things that we as organization should do. And the other thing is just, again, just totally agree with Fiona. So because the system
the caring, the protection system in Cambodia is not very strong yet. We can do not much, but educating people around us, the stakeholder that we work with, for example, like Jeva, we work with youth. So we try to integrate that kind of knowledge to them as well, including like internet safety, including child protection. You know, we may invite speaker who talk about child rights, trafficking and things like that. So that would be the thing that we should consider as well. And that will give us opportunity to collaborate. Maybe we can invite, you know, the staff from Free to Shine to come and give some presentation to our student or, you know, parent or something like that as well. So that's just a few things I want to talk. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Fiona, for the presentation. It's been fantastic. Going through your slide, I have a wow, all the slides that I have seen. So fantastic. Here, I don't have any questions, but I might say it is a request. Because I always think of the good thing to bring for our students, educate our students, and also to make sure that the community that our students are in, they are safe for the children and for the students. My request might be, do you think like Free to Shine or any of our community here, NGO as a member, have this sort of training in which we can have our students or staff to be in one of your training in the future? Or if it has a series of training, how can we join you? Yeah, that's my request.
Yeah, I think that's a good request, yes.
Yeah, we aren't doing any training per se at the moment. Possibly I'm stuck in Australia and we reduced our staff team by nearly 50% at the beginning of COVID. You're welcome to share one as a starting point, that presentation I've just done. I'm probably not in a position to be able to offer training directly at the moment because the team are busy with all the COVID stuff and the grants and all of that that we're doing. We haven't got anything. Leave it with me. We've got some community training topics. I'll have a look at them and I might be able to share like something like that to the group that you could maybe do yourself. Because our resources, I mean, everyone's resources are tied up. There is a lot of online child sexual exploitation training around in Cambodia. Done through various different places. That's quite specific though, around trafficking. Leave it with me and I'll find something that maybe I'll send to Sepol that people could do themselves, especially with students. I think it's really important.
Well, yeah. Fiona, couple of thoughts that come to mind after listening to Dara also. One would be we could have one of these upcoming workshops and have the topic just be on child protection policies. Yeah. And I think we could get somebody from Friends International, somebody from Sebastian Moreau's staff to join us at this meeting and make a presentation and do it as a training session. Because I know some of you have Thai Sen's an example. I know they have excellent child protection policies in place, I'm sure it's a continuum and some are still just thinking about it. So that might be something we could arrange that would speak to what Dara is asking and answer in part what Thai Sen said is the, what can we do? I think maybe a less valuable idea, but I'll mention it anyway, is this fellow Matt Friedman that I mentioned. I could probably get him to join us and make a presentation. that might be more along the lines of yours, though, which is awareness. Just be mindful that this stuff is going on, where a child protection policy is something very actionable that we can do that help combat the situation.
So I thought, Dara, were you actually wanting something presented for your students, though, right?
As Bill added, it would be bigger for the communities as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what I intend to say. And let me add two more things that could be added also onto our upcoming agendas for this group of meeting, I think. Something related to online safety, safety awareness, so that it's important to educate our students and our staff and our students' parents to be able to help themselves and to help their child, because there are still many things going on and parents of our students do not know how to help their child.
Yeah. Do you have
my input to this meeting.
Well, that's great. Do you have someone in mind who would be an expert in online safety awareness?
I used to hear Next Step. Used to do that before. Is that correct? I think Fiona's presentation, she was talking about Next Step too.
Yeah, I mentioned Next Step in regards to awareness, but because Next Step have done online child sexual exploitation. So have Anchor Hospital for Children. They've done joint training. So has A21 and also Friends International CSA, the Child Safety Alliance. So the most recent one I think that our team did was First Step and Anchor Hospital for Children. I think they did something together. Do you want me to look into that, Bill?
Yeah, maybe you could coordinate that with Sir Paul and I think this is a hot enough topic that it maybe belongs on our next monthly meeting.
I myself also teach genders at the university. Lukuru, I think some of your students, also my former students as well, I think we can also work together to see what we could develop something that right to your students as well. I'm happy to help with that if you need any support. So we can arrange those together. So if I...
I've just remembered also, Dara, if you look at Malopsipang's website, so Malopsipang down in Sihanoukville, they have a really good set of resources in Khmer for students around online sexual exploitation. So I think it's actually under their resources. I can find that link, and it's a really good set to use directly with young people, children and young people, and it's all in Khmer. Just remembered.
Rebecca, want to say something? Thanks, Paul. Yeah, no, I just wanted to say thanks, Fiona, for that great presentation, really insightful, and following on from what the others have said, especially Dara. Obviously, it's important for us all to know what we can do. And I just wanted to say, obviously, training would be great, but resources, because we do at CFC, we do community dialogues with our gender team. And so, if you had any of the resources, like how to present this topic to parents, any tips, like what is kind of the best setting to even speak to the parents about this topic, as it is so sensitive, I think that that's something that we could do. And regarding training, obviously, yes, to the students. If you, there's also train the trainer kind of model. You could train sort of like our staff who do these dialogues and who have that communication with the communities. That's just another thought out there. But thank you so much.
Well, Fiona, you really struck an important note with the group when we were talking about child protection policies and doing more education of this group. I saw a whole number of thumbs up popping up on my screen, so I know you hit the right chord with your conversation.
Well, thank you, and thank you for everyone's attention. And obviously, you know, it could be about trafficking, but there's so many things that all come from that as well. So I look forward to what topics we can get up, and I will look up some of those resources and send them on to Sipal. So thank you. Au contraire, everybody.
Okay. And so, Paul, will you bring the ideas together and suggest a topic for the next session? And if you need me to get involved, I'm happy to do it and contact any of my resources. We can bring somebody from the outside in.
We have people in the queue until December, so we look for someone who can speak in January.
October and November are already covered.
Yes.
So you're ahead of me. Either you told me and I forgot, or you're ahead of me.
You just forgot.
I wouldn't deny that. My brain leaks sometimes, I confess.
No problem.
Well, thank you again. We still have about a little over 45 minutes before it's your lunchtime. And this is a time when we also like to celebrate. And I know you're all having a big celebration by coming out of the red zone. I'm going to stop the recording right now, by the way.